Okay, and we're on. Okay. Hello and welcome to another episode of You Don't Look Autistic. It's been a while since we've recorded. In case this is anyone's first time listening, or if you forgot, my name's Clara. I have autism, and I am interested in talking to people about what disabilities they also have, whether they're mental or physical, and just how that affects their everyday life. So that's technically what this podcast is about. I'm also really bad at intros, so this is just how this is going to go. First of all, I'm recording in my new apartment in Waterloo, and we have housemates, so if there's background noise, sorry. There's nothing I can do about it. Other people live here. That's all for my notes for that. So I'm gonna introduce my guest, which is Jose. It's so awkward. No, it's not awkward. I don't mean it like that. This is my first time recording with a person in real life because it's always been over a like phone call before. So it feels weird. Just announcing to someone who I'm just sitting next to, but that's okay. Jose and I do live together, so don't worry, we're following COVID rules and we're not just breaking them for this podcast. We live together, so we're around each other all day. Okay, Jose, so quick background on how I know you, in case anyone cares. We met in grade 10 in high school. I don't actually remember like formally meeting you.
Well, through Kelp.
Yeah, just in high
I
school.
don't know.
I don't remember the moment where I was like, hi, I'm Clara. Like, I think it was probably for some sort of like group activity because we
Which
met.
Kelp is a extracurricular program for
Yes,
those who don't
yes.
know.
Yeah. Kelp is a alternative schooling program you can do for a semester that our high school in Guelph offered. So we met through that because you didn't go to the same high school as me at first.
No.
Yeah, and then you ended up changing schools, so then we became friends.
Yeah.
But it actually turns out we went to the same kindergarten,
Yes, we
and
did.
I didn't know that.
Even attended one of the birthday parties. I don't
Yeah,
know.
apparently it came to my birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Me neither,
I was
really.
like four. Well, it's fun that we got to meet again, at least. So, Jose, you have bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
Is that the correct sentence, like name for it, or is it
Yeah,
one longer?
bipolar one. But yeah, bipolar.
Cool. For those who of us who don't know what bipolar is, how would you define it?
So bipolar is a mood disorder. It is split into like two episode type things. There's manic and depression. So you can be like stable where your moods are like regular and normal. And then you can go into like a manic state where your moods are like very up and down and erratic, and you can talk without filters and you like just say everything that's on your mind. You have like a euphoria, you're super duper happy. Super, super creative, but also like very incoherent and doesn't always make a lot of sense. It's kind of hard to describe because it can be a lot of different things. But basically that's what it is. And then usually after experiencing a manic episode, because in a manic episode you have like all the energy in the world and you don't sleep for nights and nights. You have to you experience a down afterwards because you used up all this energy basically, and your mood goes to a low when you get depressed. So usually, typically after experiencing a manic episode, you experience a depressive episode. And that's basically what it is.
Yeah, before I met you, I did not really know what bipolar was. I had heard of it, and I'd heard of it usually through like rude jokes and stuff like that, where it's just like, oh, my cat is so bipolar. It like jumps around and then sleeps all day, or something super stupid like that. And I was like, okay. And so, yeah, after I met you, and obviously you brought it up to me, and then during our friendship, you have had to go on different medications and gone through different episodes. And so I've been there for that. And it's definitely, it was just like a huge eye opener into the whole crazy world that it is.
Yeah.
Not to like insult it or anything. But I understand that it is a lot, and it's just a constant sort of roller coaster that you get to live on.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't know much about like the difference of like mood disorders versus a mental disability kind of thing. Do you know if would you know how to define that, or
I don't really know how to differentiate.
That's okay. My guess is that I've heard like depression is a mood disorder. You know, there is like personality disorder, or like, what is it again? I don't remember. Anyways, I'm guessing if the disorders that affect your mood, or just very prominently decide what your like emotions are and how stable those are. Because I know autism, I don't think would fall under a mood disorder, because it's like, it's a psychological disorder, duh. But so is bipolar to a degree. So, yeah, that's interesting. I will have to learn more about that now that I realize.
That's something my mom would know.
Yeah, because your mom is a psychologist?
A therapist. A therapist, yes.
We'll have to have her on the podcast. yeah, so how old are you, and how did you come about finding out that you have bipolar and getting diagnosed and stuff?
I am 22. I've been diagnosed for 7 years, I think, if I did that math right. I was diagnosed at 15.
Did it come up just because you were suddenly experiencing a lot of like mood swings and like mental health?
Yeah. So it kind of like accumulated. Like it started when I was like in grade 6, I started to experience a lot of anxiety. And in grade 7 and 8, I started to like experience random bouts of depression that kind of just came out of nowhere. There was this one summer, in grade 6 probably. And we had planned that I would like, leave for a month and go to a bunch of camps and visit my aunt and uncle and like do it all by myself. And that was like really big for me at the time, because I was only like 13 and I have never been away from home for so long doing like my own thing during the summer. And I just got so much anxiety, and I was throwing up like the entire summer that I had been gone. And so we had done like a bunch of doctor's tests, and they just said that I had anxiety and depression, and we just left it at that. And then in grade 8, I had my first manic episode. And that kind of made it clear that it was bipolar, because it ended up with a hospital visit.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that's like a pretty common way to come across finding out that you have bipolar, or do you think it's like very specific to the person or gender even?
Yeah. So typically, bipolar, like, so if you have bipolar, typically it doesn't start, sorry.
No, don't worry.
So I get,
it's a big question.
Like, when I start to talk and stuff, I'll just like pause, even though I know what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, no, I forget what I'm saying every three sentences all the time.
Anyway, I know what I'm saying. So,
yes.
So
yeah, go for it.
If there's a if you're going through a life transition,
mm-hmm.
So for example, a lot of people who are diagnosed with bipolar are often diagnosed in their 20s, when they just moved to college, because college is like a huge life transition. So any like big life transition that you have, like bipolar can come on from that. Not to say that like anyone with going through some kind of life change, it's like someone who is predispositioned to have bipolar or whatever, it gets triggered by mm-hmm. any kind of like life transition. So I guess for that time for me, and my adolescence and in being 15 and everything, it was just the transition of like going into high school and starting to, and that for me was something that was stressful and that brought it on at that time. Trauma can also bring it on. And so, yeah,
that makes sense to me. Yeah. I as I said before, like I didn't really know much about it beforehand before I met you. So, I didn't know if there was like a specific way that like, by the time you're 7, kids will start exhibiting this behavior or something like that. Do you think that maybe because teenage girls can kind of get pigeonholed into being like, they're just really dramatic and emotional, but that kind of masked some of the stuff you were going through?
For sure. Because in grade 8, when I had my first manic episode, like my first manic episode went on for like just over 2 months. And at the beginning, like, yeah, my parents, even my mom being a therapist and having a mental health background, sometimes she's a bit embarrassed to admit that, but like she didn't know what was going on. And they just thought this was me going through puberty. And I was just going through a lot of changes, becoming a teenager and having a lot of mood swings. And that's what they thought it was for a while, until it got really extreme. And then they're like, okay, this can't be ignored.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably a really like common thing to happen though. Cause like, especially cause you're the oldest in your family. So you're the first kid that your parents had to parent becoming a teenager,
mm-hmm.
which I suspect is a lot. But you know, like, I think, you know, I was experiencing, like, depression and stuff from it, like, probably from when I was, like, 13, 14. But, you know, I wouldn't have known because I was, like, oh, she's a moody teenager and stuff. And I imagine that even people with, I don't want to say, like, smaller or bigger disabilities or mental illnesses, because that's not really fair. But someone who's, like, always dealt with depression but doesn't find out till they're 25 might look back on their life and be like, oh, that makes sense now. Kind of thing. I remember feeling like that when I finally got my diagnosis too. Going on along with that, so do you think, have you noticed, I think you already said before that you dealt with a lot of anxiety and stuff. Is there other like really common mental illnesses that kind of get like that piggyback on top of bipolar that you know of or have experienced?
Well, my brother, he also has bipolar and ADHD he has, and that kind of coincides with that. And it affects him very differently than anxiety if coinciding with bipolar, because they kind of react differently in that. So like when my brother is in a manic episode, they have to take his ADHD medication off. So then his ADHD is like through the roof, but he's also manic. And so it's like so crazy.
Yeah.
And then with anxiety and bipolar, during a manic episode, like the anxiety is very, very like noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense to me too, though, because if your brain is telling you that you're in a state of distress or like a really unfamiliar spot, then like anxiety around that would just be like a natural response in some ways too. So, but if you're constantly in that kind of state or just in a really regular basis of constantly going through different mindsets and understandings of things based on your emotions, then like that becoming a disorder would make sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Autism is like that too, where it kind of just has a ton of other mental illnesses or disabilities that are really common to have, just because the living with an autistic brain can be really obviously like impactful into your life and into your experiences and just how your brain stays healthy and everything. So I get that too. And I feel like it's probably like that for the majority of disorders. though I'm not stating that as a fact. I don't know for sure. So you were diagnosed at 15. Mm-hmm. How old was your brother when he was diagnosed?
Also 15.
Is it?
And it's actually uncommon for adolescents to be diagnosed. Like, it's more common for you to be in your 20s to be diagnosed.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if you're someone who's constantly, just like, because that's how your life turned out, experienced a lot of, like, upsetting events or something, or just, like, a lot of upheaval, then, like, your emotional reactions would just be, like, rationalized into that reaction of that, and might not even be noticed that it's a reaction that's happening in your brain that doesn't have to be happening necessarily, or to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how anyone finds us out without, like, completely, like, upturning their lives, good on you. Like, it sounds like a lot. Is it common for people to have siblings who also have similar disorders, or is it just happens that way?
Well, it is, what's the word when it runs through the family?
Genetic.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Like, you do get a hereditary?
Yeah, hereditary.
Is that it?
Yes, that's the right word. I think.
Like, when it runs through the family, like, it is, if you've had it in your family before, like, in your family history or background, someone, it'll, like, run through the family, so typically someone else in the family will get it, too. Mm-hmm. It's not as common for maybe siblings. Like, I think it's not as, I'd say it's common. It could be that siblings could have bipolar, but it's not as common for adolescents, for siblings who are living under the same roof, to have bipolar. Because, like, if they are siblings, then usually they'll, like, get and if they both have bipolar, they probably get diagnosed later in life, and not they'd be probably living more independently. Because mm-hmm. I know when my brother did get into the hospital and stuff, a lot of the nurses actually did not even know how to treat with bipolar siblings who are living under the same roof, like, still in their parents' home, and how to, like, treat that. So my brother, he actually had to be in the hospital a lot longer than I had to when I was first diagnosed. He was almost there for, like, a couple months, because they were trying to hold him there for as long as possible, so that when he came home, that we wouldn't trigger each other, or both go into an episode and have, like, more than one problem, because the stress that he was creating was creating stress at home, and stress creates and triggers bipolar episodes. So they were trying to keep as limited stress possible, and to keep us as separate as possible, just to limit any episodes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. It does make complete sense about how you would trigger, set each other off and stuff, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like, and I don't mean this as, like, a negative statement, but I know just from hanging out with you when you've gone through different medication changes and different episodes and stuff like that, like, it is a whole different sort of energy you put off, and a different mindset you're in, and that can, and if it's, like, particularly, like, if you're, like, really sad or really negative, then obviously, you know, I don't want to sound hokey, that's kind of, like, just the energy you give off,
yeah.
And that, and everyone feels it. If you live with someone
yeah.
in the family, like, obviously everyone feels it. Like, I have three siblings, so, like, when anyone's having a mood, you can tell, kind
yes.
of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it is interesting that you say that some folks, it's not as common for necessarily for siblings to all be diagnosed around, like, adolescence and
yeah,
stuff.
The same around the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, at the same time. That's cool, yeah. I guess. Like, interesting. I always find it interesting, too, when, like how, if I don't, like, I'm not a scientist, obviously, so I don't know how, like, genetics or hereditary diseases or illnesses or anything really works like that. But I find it interesting how it just sometimes hits everyone and sometimes it doesn't hit anybody, kind of scenario. Because, like, I'm an identical triplet. So you would assume, I guess, that my other sisters would have autism as well, or maybe experience other significant mental illnesses or disabilities, and they don't to the same extent. Like, they are not autistic. They've never had to check out getting diagnosed with that. We all experience, like, anxiety and depression, but I think that also just comes out of the fact that we're all just sensitive people and stuff. And that can just be a reaction to, if you have a sensitive mind and a sensitive heart and everything, then, you know, that's just kind of how it's going to work, I feel like. So it's interesting because I think that also kind of showed as a, like, comparison in a sense, at least for myself, you know, like, as we got older, my parents could kind of be like, well, Amy and Maggie are reacting to the situation this way, and Claire's reacting oppositely or differently. And, like, that was a kind of starting point for figuring out what was going on. It's interesting to me because, like, my parents aren't autistic as far as I can tell. Never been diagnosed. I have, like, one cousin who's also on the spectrum. I have a lot of cousins. I don't see them very much. So there could be more. But yeah, it's interesting because, like, no one really knows what causes it. And I assume, is that pretty much the same for bipolar? Like, no one's sure at the moment what is the exact reason for it.
Yeah. All I know is that it's hereditary and that it's triggered by traumas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We don't have to say too much on the, like, scientific basis because I know neither of us are super well-versed in that. I don't want to just start plugging information that's not true. So after you received your diagnosis when you were 15, was that, like, a relief to you, or was it kind of felt like a death sentence in a way, without being dead, obviously, but yeah.
I think it's changed over the years.
Yeah, like,
I think when I first received my bipolar diagnosis, I was really, like, confused and deer in the headlights almost, and, like, just did not understand what took over my mind and, like, how I could have done all these things under not my control that weren't my control, I mean. And, like, what took over me, basically. And I think I was more, like, embarrassed and just felt a lot of shame over all these things that I didn't have control over doing. I don't know. So I think a lot of bipolar for me has mainly been, like, an acceptance journey and learning how to accept who I am and to realize the people that are in my life who accept me for who I am, and to recognize those people and to forget about the people that you did some silly things in front of that are never going to be in your life again anyway. And I think now I'm more relieved that I have a diagnosis that makes it all make sense and makes whatever happened make sense. I hope that makes sense.
It does make sense to me. And I can relate to that as well. And I think maybe other people too would probably feel the same especially when you're diagnosed from an age where you can understand more what's happening. Like, when I talked to Joel, he had mentioned, you know, he got diagnosed as a kid and that he just didn't have, like, the knowledge yet or capacity to, like, really get what that meant. And so that's a completely different experience as to when you're, like, a teenager or an adult and all of a sudden it's like, oh, by the way, you have this forever now kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, and in one way, I feel like it's like, oh, it helps because it makes other things in my life make sense. And I can let go of some of that confusion now.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's just like, what do you mean it's not going to go away kind of thing?
Yeah.
And that can be really, like, challenging and, like, sad at times to deal with because, you know, obviously, I feel like, I'm on me for a second. Before I received my diagnosis, I was really under the impression that all the things I was struggling with, I would just grow out of. And then I was like, and I was 13, and then I was 14, and then I was 16, and everything. And I was like, I wonder when I'm going to grow out of this yet, kind of thing. And it's hard to realize that that's not exactly how it works. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's basically what I'm saying too.
Yeah.
Did your family and friends and just immediate community have a supportive reaction to that, or were they like dismissive or scared?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been incredibly lucky with the people that I do have in my life. Because from the moment I was diagnosed, even like, I think I just always had a really great community around me, and everybody was always super supportive, and like the people that mattered and mattered to me in my life, and close friends and everything. Like, I never received any, like, anything that was like, I don't know, I've never lost any friends or received any like disrespect or anything like that. I've always had a very close set of friends who have been very supportive or try to help me out, or
they just have like a willingness to like learn and understand what you need and everything.
I
can recognize that too with your family and friends who I have met. They've all they just seem like the sweetest, most supportive people for anything that you mm-hmm. would go through.
Yeah, and I've met people who have a bipolar diagnosis, and they didn't have that same experience and didn't have as supportive people in their lives. But yeah, I think I just consider myself very lucky with the people that are in my life, and I've always considered a very supportive one. So.
Yeah, I think that's really great, Jose. Yeah. I think that's a huge part of getting a diagnosis too, is like the reaction you get from your loved ones and stuff, because not that it should define how you feel about it, but it does, and it will for a while at least. It was kind of funny because like I was 18 when I started looking up what autism was and looking into getting a diagnosis, and like I was pretty solid that was what I was dealing with. But I didn't get like an official diagnosis or confirmation until I was 20. So I had 2 years of being like, maybe this is a thing. And it was interesting when I would talk about it to like my siblings or just my friends and people I was close to. And some of them, my sisters were like, yeah, we know, kind of thing. And that was their response, which was funny. And then I had some people who were like, well, so what kind of scenario? Because like, obviously, to them, I presented very like high functioning, and they weren't present for most of the struggles that I had throughout my whole life. And they're just like, hey, cool. Like, it's not that we don't care. It's just that it doesn't seem like a big issue. And so that could be a little challenging when especially at times you're like, oh my gosh, this is it. And then they're like, okay. And you're like, all right, cool. Thanks. I also have noticed some kind of like response of like, oh, everyone just wants a diagnosis these days. Like I had a doctor who I had to talk to about to get a referral from to continue with the diagnosis, and she was saying stuff like that, like not saying that was what I was doing, but just like she's like, oh, just I fill out so many diagnosis forms these days or something like that, or everyone wants to be on medication now. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting comment from a doctor. but I mean, yeah, I hope if anyone who's listening and knows someone who's going through diagnosis, those are not helpful things to say. yeah, don't worry about that part. It's fine. Just don't say it. Next question. Sorry for the sounds outside if you can hear that. Someone is obnoxiously driving a motorcycle. So after you learned more for yourself about what bipolar is, Jose, what would you find that now knowing more about it and experiencing it is like a big misconception, like from people you meet or from media and stuff like that? Like, what do you think is that?
Yeah, well, Surprisingly, I mean, a lot of people, if I'm meeting them or like new friends, they don't typically know what bipolar is even. I always have to explain it. And then they always think like stereotypes like that you're rapidly cycling through moods, but like all the time. They don't think it's like split up by episodes. They're like, they don't think you're ever stable. They just think you're always erratically like changing your mood.
Yeah.
So I get that commonly.
I honestly haven't seen it portrayed much in media.
Yeah,
I think there's a character on Degrassi in like 2004. Yeah. Or something.
You know, I Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh yes, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I've seen Touch of Fire, and that one.
That's a movie.
Yeah, it's a movie. I'm most impressed with that one, as I think they portray the mania really, really well, and just the rawness and everything of it. And just like they portray it really well in the sense that they portray what it's kind of like to be manic and what that world is kind of like, but what it looks like on the outside to other people,
mm-hmm.
as well as what it looks like to the person in their head. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like they did an impressive job at that. a better job than most, because that's kind of really hard to do, to portray what's going on in the head and then what's everyone else seeing, and like
mm-hmm.
how to translate that. So I was impressed with that movie.
I haven't seen it. We should add it to our list, Rose.
Yes.
Jose and I have a really long movie and TV show list. We're trying to get through our second quarantine.
Silver Linings Playbook is good in the sense that, well, it kind of talks about the difference about how bipolar characterizes in guys and in girls, because it does characterize a bit differently. And even between my brother and I, you'd be able to see that. And this is just typically, so I don't know if this is true for all mm-hmm. girls and guys.
Yeah, it's very
But typically guys experience more anger in manic episodes. And girls are like typically like more emotional. So I'm very sensitive in episodes and I cry a lot. And my brother can typically get like really, really angry. And then not all girls are like super sensitive in episodes and stuff. I just tend to be a sensitive mm-hmm. person.
Yeah.
So also that's another thing with bipolar too, because it's your personality traits being accentuated. So it's mm-hmm. really the person you already are, just like 100% more heightened.
Yeah.
So some of it, me being more sensitive and emotional in my episodes, not just because I'm a girl, am I just because that's also my personality.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that too, knowing you for
however
many years now, that I think even when you've been like the most stable that I've known you, you're still very emotional.
It's true.
And I think that there's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. So, and then Silver Linings Playbook, they kind of show how anger was a really big thing for that main character.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
Me either,
but
I know what you're talking about.
But I remember, So that's the other thing too, because you can't really stereotype what mania can typically look like for person to person, because it's very, very different for everyone, because it's really based on your personality.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really like fair assumption. Something you notice. I'm forgetting words right now. And I also noticed that I think probably people with any sort of struggle, disability of a kind would be able to say that the media stereotypes it. And I think part of that is just the tools that media has to portray such a huge concept within 2 hours and like have a plot with it, you know, and everything. I think, you know, there's that boundary. But you know, there's another car going by. Awesome. if you can't hear it, there's a car going by very obnoxiously. It's gone now. What was I saying? Media is really stereotypical, but I think also in some ways it always will be like that because each person's experience is so individual. And even though, like, yes, their disability or mental illness or whatever you want to call it is diagnosed as, you know, a name, it's still like I don't know, like, there's this saying that like if you meet someone with autism, you've met someone with autism. Like, it's, there's not every single person will be like that. And I think it'd be like that for anyone who's just like, who experiences anxiety, experiences depression. Like, it's something we all experience, but everyone experiences
it. Exactly. Because people tend to generalize disorders so much too.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even my sister's done that before asking me. She's like, your anxiety looks very different from my friend's anxiety. And it's like, well, it's very different for different people.
Yeah. Different lives, different environmental triggers and everything. You know, it would be impossible, I think. Like, even like my sisters who were triplets, were identical. We have pretty much the same life experiences up until we were about teenagers, and all handle stuff very differently. So that's cool. It's a cool fact. Good to know, or keep in mind, at least when you're watching something that is portraying an illness. Like, I think with Rain Man, everyone's like, oh, everyone with autism is like a savant, mastermind. And I'm just like, I wish. That would be so cool, I think. But no, I can't do math very well. yeah, so that answers that question. I think this probably also molds into the question of what misconceptions do you think there are, but is there anything that you like wish people knew the most or wish people would understand more when they meet someone who has bipolar or maybe just experiences someone who's going through a specific like bipolar manic episode or depressive episode, like something you're like, I just wish people understood this more, and it could be bigger or little. It's a big question, I'm sorry.
a couple of things. I mean, that it can take time to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a really long process because a manic episode the shortest amount of time it can be is 2 weeks, and the longest amount of time it can be up to months. And then after the manic episode, if you go to the hospital, or you don't always go to the hospital, but when you come down from that, then the depressive episodes can last up to months as well. So it can take a better part of like half a year to like really recover.
Mm-hmm.
And
the next thing you know, it's starting all over again.
So I was like, you're always preventing reoccurring episodes. And so it is a continuous battle. Like, even when you're stable and stuff like that, you have to continually take care of yourself in order to prevent reoccurring episodes. And there's a lot of prevention that goes into it. Like, even if I'm going on a trip, or I'm going camping or going somewhere, like, that's something I have to talk to my psychiatrist about, and I have to like do a bunch of prevention so that the stress of the trip doesn't make me go into an episode of any sort. So I guess just to know that like it is a process to recover, and it is a continuous, like, it's a continuous effort to stay stable.
I after knowing you this long can recognize that too. And it's just seems like a lot of work, and I can recognize it in myself too when, like, you know, say like it's a holiday, my family's like, we're gonna go to Toronto, and visit some family and explore the city for a bit, you know, it's like, there's all these extra factors you have to take in. It's like, at least for myself, like I can recognize, like, hey, how overstimulating is that going to be? Will I be burnt out within the first 2 hours? Will it cause me to go into a meltdown or shut down? Will there be food that I'm willing to eat there because of sensory stuff? Will we do an activity first and then socialize after? Because if we do the activity first, socializing will be harder because I'll be more tired by that point. You know, like, there's all these extra factors that you constantly have to take into account, even on, like, little things and stuff, which, so when it's interesting when someone comes up to, I've been told, you know, for other people, of like, oh, well, you do really well for someone who's autistic, kind of thing. I'm just like, well, maybe today. Yeah. I might have a meltdown tomorrow. I don't know. I think that's a really fair and true thing to wish people knew more. And I suspect that other people with other various issues would feel the same. I just don't assume anything. Yeah. Everyone always says, you know, don't assume because someone was rude to you one day that they're an awful person, that just be having a bad day. Maybe their cat died. I don't know. Stuff like that. And I'm just like, I think that really, really applies to, like, every situation. So, not to be cliche, but it's true. Is there anything you like or, like, value about being bipolar?
There actually is.
Yay. I think there's always a cool side, like a cool, unique thing that comes along with any sort of trial, you know?
So. Yeah. Okay. So what is it? Hopefully I'll be able to, like, explain this.
That's okay. Explain it however you want to.
Okay. So, if anyone knows me, knows that I'm a very, like, introspective person. I'm very, like, I've always wanted to set out to, like, discover myself basically, and to go on to this, like, self reflection journey of, like, trying to go on a path of self improvement. And I've always kept, like, journals, and I've always been, like, just wanting to go on some, like, discover myself type path.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, as everyone does, like, everyone kind of feels like a mystery to themselves sometimes. And I feel like when I experience, like, a manic episode, because it's all of me all at once, and, like, everything all at once, I feel like I'm able to experience myself and experience, like, sometimes I don't really understand how much something means something to me until I have, like, uncontrollable enthusiasm for it. And when I experience a manic episode or something, it's like, oh, so that's something I'm really passionate about. Or, like, even when I'm stable and just myself, like, I kind of sometimes have a trouble, like, expressing my true thoughts and opinions on things, or like, I like to work really hard on trying to figure out what I think about things and how things mean to me. But when I'm in a manic episode, all my thoughts, ideas, and opinions are just there, and they just come out of me. And it's like, oh, so that's what I thought about this. This is what I think about that. Great. I've been, like, trying to figure out for years what I thought about that. But apparently I always knew. Because I'm saying it right now. Like, it's perfect.
That's so awesome. I love that.
I feel like when I come out of a manic episode, I'm always clearer and clear. I have a clear understanding of who I am and my passions and what I want to be doing in life, and I understand myself better.
So. That's really cool, man. I think that's awesome. I think that, you know, having the experience of going through a particularly trying situation will force anyone to have to self-reflect and see who they are and learn how they function and stuff. And some people can either, like, you know, shut that down and not look at it and ignore it, or you can, like, actually delve in and see what it all means to you and, like, And then you know later on how, what that stuff is and how you want to choose to function with it in your life. And I think that's cool that you've found it as a positive and a growing thing,
yeah.
You know, and not something that's like, oh crap, this again, I have to deal with me some more. It's like, well, I know I'm going to have to. So, yeah, I think that's a really awesome positive. I can relate to that too, with autism, where, you know, like you were saying how, you know, sometimes when you've gone through a manic episode that it's like, oh, I got to a hardcore experience, like my love of flowers or something like that, you know,
yeah.
It could be anything, I'm sure. And, I can relate that too, as like within like the whole special interest area of being like, but I really, really love this. And even though this was difficult and isolating and caused some turmoil, I got to really like this thing for a little while, or for however long it lasts, or maybe it lasts forever. You never know. And that's fun. And that can be, and it's so individual and specific to you. So that's exciting. Well, that brings us to the end of our main questions. We're at 45 minutes. I think that's great timing. I'm going to start burning out anyways. So not to like shut down the conversation or anything, but I want to be aware of what's happening. So my last question, Jose, which I know you know because you've been a lovely listener of the podcast too, is, what's your favorite movie or television show? I was going to say that you've watched recently, but we've watched everything together recently, so you can say whatever one you want, obviously. Or book too, because I know you're a fan of reading.
Yeah. My favorite movie is Virtue Terabithia.
Yes, I know. We should just watch it again. I haven't seen the movie in ages. I haven't read the book in ages.
It's a book too.
Yeah.
I like it.
The book is really
yeah.
sweet. I remember listening to it as an audiobook in a car ride with my family when I was a kid and being helped make the car ride go, you know? So awesome.
I just love her imagination.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's a great selection. Awesome. Well, we can end it there. Thank you for chatting with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, thank you.
And sitting on my floor with me for an hour.
No problem.
I would say, like, good luck with how everything's going, but I live with you, so let's go get your laundry, I guess. It's done now. Okay. Thank you for listening to whoever listened, and have a good one. I need to figure out how to properly close out.